You're now listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, broadcasting from sunny Orange County, California. Filmmaker, journalist, and film historian, Paul Booth.
Aloha. Welcome to Talking Pictures with Paul Booth. I'm your host. Hey, what a double joy we got here. It's Happy Aloha Friday, which I'm from Hawaii, but that applies to wherever you're at and whatever you're doing. And I see we have our caller coming in, and I'll do a little bit of just a brief intro before I bring her live on the air. Today, we're going to be talking with cinematographer Alicia Robbins, who's shot all kinds of stuff. She's got a great blog. We're going to be discussing some Grey's Anatomy's episodes she shot that were incendiary and socially relevant. Why not? Let's jump into it. I see we have our caller. Is that you, Alicia?
Yes, it is. Hi.
Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, good.
Oh, yeah, I can hear you. Of course, we're here today, Alicia Robbins. She's got a great blog. And the other thing, too, is I kind of like to learn from these interviews. So sometimes it's not that I slacked on research, but that it's kind of like, hey, you know, if I have the person who wrote the blog, why not have them tell me some of the stuff I saw? So out there, everyone, Alicia Robbins, Robbins, like Baskin Robbins, has a really cool blog, all kinds of cool stuff. I first off wanted to know just a little bit of like your background. I saw you went to AFI. Like, what made you say I'm going to be a cinematographer?
Oh, wow. It really was just pretty much one experience that I had on set when I was a PA many years ago. And I've probably talked about the story quite a bit just because it was such a powerful moment in my life. I was a PA in Alabama, actually, when a movie came through, and Wally Pfister was shooting it. So,
don't get me started on Wally Pfister. I apologize. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. yeah, Wally Pfister was shooting this film, and it was a low budget movie, and I was a production assistant on it, and I knew I wanted to get into film production in some capacity. I wasn't quite sure if it would be directing, as most people always think, oh, I want to be a director, I want to be a writer. But I was watching him on set, and I was just fascinated with what he was doing. And I knew he was the director of photography, but I wasn't still quite sure exactly what that role was, even when I was watching him. A lot of times I wasn't on set either, because as a production assistant, as you know, you're blocking doors, you're holding traffic, you're doing all this other stuff that you're not really getting to watch what's happening on set. But
you're doing whatever no one wants to do. They took a vote.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sometimes I got stuck with some really horrible work, but whatever. You did whatever you were told. But the times that I could actually go to set and hang out just for maybe even just for a few beats and sort of watch him work, I was just really fascinated by it. And it wasn't until the end of that show, that movie, that I actually got to really talk to him about how he got into what he was doing. Does he have any advice for how to get into what he was doing? And one of the things that he said was, well, if you do have an opportunity to put some sort of reel together and apply to the American Film Institute, that's where I went to school. And I think it's a really great start. So it really was from that I decided to go back to Vanderbilt and start working on kind of my cinematography craft and use that to apply to grad programs. And I didn't just apply to AFI, I applied to some other grad programs too, but I was fortunate enough to actually get into AFI. So it was really getting into that program that sort of clicked for me, saying, okay, I guess this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to pursue. So, yeah.
Wow. Wally Pfister, you know, just so everyone out there knows, everybody on the planet, you've seen Wally Pfister's work. He shot The Dark Knight and Moneyball, which is one of my faves. So right there alone, you guys can now apply who Wally Pfister is, because most people that like Wally Pfister just kind of geek out on him. And then everybody kind of looks around and goes, who's Wally Pfister?
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. Wally. Wow. Well, thank you for that. Yeah. You know, because I'm, you know, what I'm thinking of now is now that I'll make this like 30 seconds. Now that you're mentioning him, there's a lot of shots in Moneyball that are making me think of stuff you did in Grey's with like really extreme depth of field and shadows, and I'm not saying you watched Moneyball and then applied it to The Last Supper, but it's kind of giving me it's made me, I'm sure you've, some of the things I'm going to say today, you've probably heard a million times, but well, obviously silent all these years, you know, we'll save, but The Last Supper is the first time where I was like, what is this cinematographer doing? Because obviously you like 12 Angry Men and Dog Day Afternoon. So I was really like, wow, this cinematographer is making this work in one scene. So I'm sure you're not allowed to say whose house that was, but could you go into like maybe some of the challenges that really are in a cinematographer's mind when it's like, okay, all I have is four characters and all I have is like eight chairs and I have to make the depth of field look good. And so what are kind of some things you would talk about The Last Supper?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that that was challenging. It's the whole, trying to keep it interesting when you're in the same location for a whole episode. And to vary up the shots too, as you're going through the episode. So it doesn't feel like you're just watching the same thing over and over and over again. One thing that was great was that the director and I, Nicole Rubio, we had ample prep on that episode. So she shot listed everything, which is actually just so you know this, and you probably have talked to other DPs about this before. In a lot of episodic television where you're just going back to back to back episodes, and sometimes you have very little prep, shot lists sometimes don't happen at all. And you are a lot of times blocking it out on the day and figuring out what those shots are going to be. Whereas for this episode, we did have time to figure out, okay, for this scene, this is how we want to cover this one. These are probably the eye lines that we need between these characters because this moment is about them. So we did have time to actually sit down and look through all the shots that we needed to cover that episode and to cover all those scenes. The challenge in that particular location is, well, one thing about Grey's Anatomy is a lot of it is on the stages where you have removable walls. You're not dealing with actual sunshine moving across the sky. Whereas this house was a practical location. So you're not able to move pillars, move walls. You have to find shots to work around that. And yes, the sun was going down at 5:30 in the afternoon because we were shooting that in late October. So these were all things that you deal with as a DP when you're working at a practical location. This location also was all beige walls. And so there wasn't really a lot of contrast in the floor versus the wall, and versus sometimes even the people in the scene, it all was kind of in the same color palette. So one thing that was very helpful was that our production designers and art directors helped add pops of color to make sure that it wasn't just all kind of like this neutral beigey tones all around. So that's always a challenge too, because you never know sometimes when you're going into a practical location whether or not you can paint walls and make it look different. In this particular house, it was so massive, there was no way that we were going to be going in and painting everything. And the house
they didn't touch a thing in that house, but tell everybody not to mess up cords or start fires.
I mean, we changed, art was changed, curtains could be changed, things like that. So a lot of the furniture was swapped out, just to add that contrast that we were looking for. I think the biggest challenge in that location really was just trying to keep it interesting with the people sitting around the table. And you're talking about depth of field. You're talking about like the fall off of the depth of field that you were noticing, or there was a lot of depth?
And just so people know, The Last Supper is a season 16, episode 12 of Grey's Anatomy. You can watch on Netflix, where I am too geeky to say that I know all their names, but Jesse Williams, James Pickens, Debbie Allen, they're all like, I honestly, if I really started going, you'd probably hang up. They're all having dinner. And what the shock came to my mind was you kind of had this shot at the end of the table looking at all four of them. And it wasn't, and it was just tight on all their backs. And then way past Dr. Weber, it was like, it wasn't just you assume there's a massive kitchen. It wasn't just assume that there's 150 feet to the next wall. It was like I saw all the way to the back wall. Now, grays, of course, like you were saying, removable walls, they're not going for cinematography. So this was like, to me, it was like this episode feels like a movie and it's cinematic. Yeah. And I had never felt that watching Grey's. I always just bite it. I've seen every episode since one. So I was like, I always just follow the storyline and I spend time with my mom. And then it's like, wait a minute, why do I see that wall? What is the cinematographer including that wall for? Because she doesn't need to. I mean, you know how flat some of the shots can be on that show. So that was what I was getting at with the depth of field. By the way, I had a quick question for you before we proceed. One of our producers, and she's also an artist, it's my mother. She wanted to know if she could call in when we discussed the silent these years, because I kind of wanted to have the woman POV. So would that be okay?
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
I just wanted to ask. I didn't want to like spring like a mom. Okay. So, so the depth of field. Here's the, you just mentioned a type of depth of field. And so these are the questions with your depth of field. Were you shooting on an Alexa? Did you have time to get some dynamic range in post? Like what type of lenses were you using for that?
Yeah. So this one, and I'm trying to remember because now this is pretty far back. Most of the time we're using Cook S4s for our lensing, and we do work off Alexas, either the Alexa XT or the Mini. This one, we did pull out some zoom lenses just for speed. We always had three cameras on that particular episode, and that was one of the ways that we were able to get that variety of coverage that we needed around the table. We ran three cameras almost all the time. And then leaving the cameras mostly on zoom lenses helped us reframe on the fly and very quickly if we needed to. We were very limited in time at this location. So anything that we could do to help speed it up was important. but going back to the whole thing where you're saying this felt a little bit like a mini movie, this was what we call a standalone episode. And the standalone episodes, even when the producers described what the standalone episodes are, they said they should feel like little mini movies. Like that's the idea behind it.
Okay.
And there's a few episodes out there that are what they call a standalone episode. Silent All These Years was also a standalone episode. I did three of them this past season.
Shot was probably the other one, the trial.
Yes, that was actually, no, believe it or not, that was not a standalone. That was but because it was all location, it did feel like it was a standalone because the whole thing took place on location. But Love of My Life, which was one of the later ones, was also a standalone episode. So I did get the opportunity this season, actually last season and this season, to do most of the standalone episodes, which are supposed to feel a little bit different from the typical Grey's Anatomy look. Not necessarily the look, it's still within the confines of established for the show. Like we're not all of a sudden going to go crazy handheld and snap zooming.
right.
But as little mini movies, that's exactly what we're going for those standalone episodes. So I'm actually glad that you picked that out.
And thank you. I'm a little bummed that you made me sound like I didn't get every Grey's Anatomy question right, but I'll just deal with that later. on those mini movies, I'm just pathetic.
Well, they don't advertise it that way. They don't advertise it as, it's brand new standalone episode coming out. We just know internally that that's what these are. And so they're supposed to feel a little bit outside of the hospital.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I really appreciate that. And I wanted to throw in that The Last Supper was also a very important episode, and I'll save a little bit of it for what I'm going to ask you about social relevance and episodes that you shoot. But also mm-hmm. in that episode, for audience, there's a death of one of the characters' uncles, and it's kind of like a really profound statement about coming out, and you kind of don't know where it's going, and then just like all of a sudden, boom, at the end. And it's really, really powerful stuff. So I really suggest you watch it on Netflix. I don't even like saying our show's liberal, because where we're at in the world right now, to me, parties are dead. But anyways, I wanted to say that I appreciate you as an artist, because I appreciate all artists who do go out there and tackle the stuff that are labeled tough or are put in stigma, and give us a chance as viewers to see them and discuss them.
Right.
I think that's the most important thing artists can do. So you mentioned something about the location and stages, and I had that written here. Of course, I'm not going to reveal where Grace shoots, but stages, I've read that they have like 5 or 6 stages. So what are some mm-hmm. challenges that you've had with, and I know you can't say where Pac North is or if it's a set, but is there some specific challenges that come to, other than we know the movie gods like to play with set work, that you have kind of like a well-oiled team, you come into stages, you might have a grip who's been there for 15 years, and then you go to set mm-hmm. and you might have a grip who, you know, it's their third show. Like, how, you know what I mean? How does that work for you, mixing location and set in a show that's been predominantly set?
Right, right. The one thing, going back to kind of the standalones, a lot of the standalone episodes, because they were location based and they were being shot simultaneously to main unit episodes. So I did often have to bring in a whole other crew, a completely different crew, to do those standalone episodes that weren't the main unit crew members. I had some people that had worked on previous Grey's episodes, but then I also was bringing on some new crew members that I actually hadn't worked with before. And a lot of them were very, location savvy, for these standalone episodes. A lot of the work that they had done previously was on location. That being said, though, when we did the 350th episode, which was the big court case, that was with main unit and that was all location based. And it didn't feel like, to me, it didn't feel like there was a struggle for the main unit crew coming off stage work and then moving over to working on location. I think there's just something ingrained in crew members when they've been working and shooting for over 20, 30 years, that they just know how to do it. Whether it's stage work or location work, you know, they know how to do it. And really a lot of it is a testament to the rigging crew as well. So the rigging crew not only works with the stage work with main unit, but they would also help us with establishing what needed to be laid out for the standalone unit on location. And those crew members are so good at their job. They've been doing it for so many years that they have ways of executing just the tasks at hand that I've just never even experienced before. Like, and that's the thing too, is I'm coming off independent film. And then to go from that to working on a show like Grey's Anatomy, where I had these seasoned veterans in the grip and electric department, and just really helping and assisting me too, to understand like, what are these big units that I need to have, and what should I have even on standby just in case I need it. And having them there and helping in that regard has been really invaluable, and I've learned a lot from them too. So to kind of get back to the question of going from a stage show to location, I feel like the challenges are more on just, truthfully, it's really about the removable walls and the sun moving. Like, other than that, it feels pretty much the same. But as the sun moves across the sky and you're having to relocate your lighting, or you're scrambling to get the last shot before the sun completely goes down, that's really the biggest challenge. And it's just knowing how to balance your light ratios so that it stays consistent. And that the big one that you were talking about with the courtroom scenes, what was so tricky about that was that also was shot, I believe, in November, and our sun was gone by like 5:30. And those windows are practical windows. That isn't an effect. That isn't a green screen background. Those are actually giant practical windows that look out into this beautiful golf course area. And so we knew, and this was an episode that I shot with Debbie Allen, we knew that anything that we're shooting for that day, we had to start looking out those big windows and get everything looking that way. And then by the time the sun was going down, we would flip the whole world, look back towards where like Ellen was sitting and where the lawyers were sitting. And then I had to relight that room so that it still felt like daytime. So that's what we did almost daily in that location.
So that was very
difficult.
That episode was another one that made me, I think that's actually the episode. That's the episode that made me look your name up, because there's this one shot, Meredith Stout looking over. I know it's not Puget Sound unless you flew up to get one shot at Puget Sound. And she's just staring in thought. And there was just so much depth and so much sky and water that was where I was just like, you know, pardon my language, WTF is Gray doing here? Because it was like the first time where I felt it was like, it felt like some French film to me. It was like, this isn't Meredith. This isn't, this is like some woman in thought. Like, this is a character study. She's not.
Yeah.
I can't spew story stuff. It makes me sound so nerdy. Like, and I'm just like, wow. Like, she's in her own world, and like this cinematographer is not just catching the usual come around the corner and then all of a sudden the doctors just happen to bump into each other like they always do. And, you know, I'm sorry, to me, I call it like gobbledygook that you have to eat. Like,
yeah. I feel you on that one, because that is now the opening shot of my reel. So, so you and I have the same feeling.
Oh, yeah, I noticed that. I saw that. It was just, there was so like, and so here's the other question I had. And of course, I have a hard time framing this one, because I know you know, they're using names and stuff, but I noticed that you got to one of the episodes you made, one of the cast members was directing. So is there anything you can share that makes that kind of interesting, that you're kind of like, because I assume you don't usually work with directors who have like a 10-year dynamic with the crew and, you know, like have been doing that for 10 years and, you know, are probably friends with the security guard. So is there anything you can say about the episode you did with the cast member?
Well, I mean, there's a few cast members that do direct. And so I did do one with Kevin McKidd, and then Debbie Allen also. So we, and I've done several with Debbie. So is there a particular one that you wanted to
funny. I hate saying this. I'm sorry. I hate saying this. It sounds so bad. I don't consider Debbie Allen a cast member, because I like know she's an EP and like she's Debbie Allen.
Yes.
So I was meaning more Kevin McKidd,
because right?
He's like been there so long. So it's so weird. I mean, no disrespect to Debbie Allen, but it's just, and I see when she directs, but just, so I mean, like, that's cool. Like when Jesse Williams did one, and I love when Chandra Wilson does them, and Ellen Pompeo's episode was ridiculous. So Yeah, so basically Kevin McKinn, you said it, I'll agree with you.
Yeah. Yeah, and Kevin has been directing episodes for a while now, and I really, and that was the first episode that I did this past season was with Kevin, and I really enjoyed working with him a lot. And I think it's because also he does have a shorthand with knowing what he wants. And I think it's because he has been on the show for so long and he has directed many episodes that it was pretty comforting working with him because he does have a clear vision of what it is that he needs for the edit. His style of coverage is really cool. He likes a lot of camera movement. He's very quick too. He doesn't really do a lot of takes. He can see if he's getting the performance that he needs because he knows those characters so well. So he could tell instantly if he's gotten the performance that he needs from his coworkers. It is funny though when he has to actually step in and be in the episode because then he gets to go and look at the scene. Obviously, we show him playback, but sometimes he'll just go, "Was that good? Was that good?" And I'm like, I don't know. You should look at it because I don't want to comment on performance or anything. That's not my job. But he'll go, "Oh, right, I like right. it. Was that good?" I'm like,
I love it.
I liked it, but maybe you should watch it too. So,
I love that. So I'm always intrigued.
When he isn't getting to watch it with me, I try not to answer that question of is it good because I'm looking at so many other things than what he's looking at. So we always make sure that the actor gets to see a playback as well.
Well, how do you, you know, and since you're mentioning that, and thank you for sharing that. That's a great story because I always wonder when they're, well, I can always kind of tell when I see that the storyline shifts and then I see them in like one scene. I'm like, okay, Jesse Williams is, even though he's only directed one, I'm like, Jesse Williams is directing this one because his episode was a great episode about the social medical care system, but we definitely won't get into that one. Hold on, I have a caller. Yeah. I wonder who it is. Okay, let's see. Welcome, caller. Are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, I guess this can kick off a little bit of discussion about Silent all these years. Alicia, this is Carolyn, my mother.
Hi.
Carolyn,
hello,
this is Alicia.
Nice to meet you.
Hi, Alicia. Nice to meet you, too.
Okay, so Silent all these years as people don't know, as season 15, episode 19 of Grey's Anatomy, the premise is a woman comes in and at first it just assumes she's maybe been assaulted or in a fight. And then you kind of catch on that she's been raped. And then also the main premise, which Alicia does a mind-boggling breakdown on her blog of shooting this diner scene, is that Dr. Karev Joe is seeking out her birth mother. And comes to the realization that, well, the mother tells her that she was the child of a rape. So, very heavy duty episode. Alicia, this was another one where Mom and I were kind of just like floored. And so, Mother, why don't you? You said you had rewatched it. Why don't you ask what you'd like to ask?
Well, thank you for having me on, Paul and Alicia.
of course.
What was really amazing to me, Alicia, was that before I had even read the credits and knew that you were the director of cinematography on this Grey's Anatomy, just the way that the whole thing captured like my attention throughout the night, not just because of the subject matter, but that just the way that it was this kind of this dance, you know, it was just the softness, this intensity. It was just amazing. And I'm wondering, how do you work? How do you communicate with others that you're involved with in terms of the writing or the acting or the directing? How does that all come together for you?
Right. Well, that was my very first episode that I shot for Grey's Anatomy.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
And luckily too, going into it, the fact that Debbie Allen was directing was very helpful because she is the producing director. And I love that you just said that it felt like a dance, because that totally makes sense too, it coming from Debbie Allen, because she actually blocks out her shots like a choreographer. So that might be part of what you were feeling when you're watching that episode. And then the one thing going into that as well, since that was my first episode with Grey's Anatomy, I really wanted to make sure that I was getting everything that Debbie really wanted for that episode. And some of the things that she asked for were very challenging, but we still figured out a way to make it work. Sometimes it did mean going a little bit longer on the day than we had planned. But I was just really trying hard to serve her vision for that story and without compromise. And I think that what was really nice about that particular episode was that the producers were very much all on board with helping us make things happen without compromise. Not that I'm saying that any other episodes are really compromised, but there's usually some corners that have to be cut in certain episodes just to make the budget or just to make the day. But everyone was in full support of anything that we needed for that particular episode, because we knew that it was so important to tell it right and to tell it well. And so we had all the resources that we needed to give it that visual impact that you're talking about.
Well, it really shows through. I mean, if you're not a Grey's Anatomy fan, or mm-hmm. even familiar with Grey's Anatomy, you know, I mean, I don't mean like you have to not be a fan, but that work holds its own. Like, you could watch that just as an episode and understand it completely.
Oh yeah, Mom, she was saying how some episodes of Grey's are called standalone episodes. So it's interesting that you caught on to that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it was amazing, and it was powerful, and it was, healing. You know, like, I mean, I think mm-hmm. whether you've had an experience of that kind of trauma to your physical soul and your being and your body, whether you're a male or a female, you got something away from that episode. Mm-hmm. Whether it was the fact that you can support one another, or that the courage it takes to speak out. And it's just mm-hmm. amazing to me how your I appreciate your ability to do that. And not just on this episode. I mean, I came on late board in this conversation that you're having, so I hope I'm not being redundant. But I had an opportunity to look at some of your other work that you do, or your artistry that you share. And that word dance wasn't just about this episode. When I saw your Lumix video online, the mm-hmm. way oh my gosh, that it was such a peaceful and it told a story without any words.
Oh, thank you.
It was just incredible. And then just how you work with the light and the movement. And I was like, wow, this soul has a very lot of creativity and talent. And I'm grateful that you have the platform to do that, because you're very good at what you're doing.
Much.
Well, and I appreciate it, because it brings things out. I mean, you don't have to, like I said, you don't have to be a fan of maybe that particular story or that particular message, and the way that you did that, or even in your little vignettes things I've seen, or the comedy, like in, oh, what was that wonderful show I liked? Wedding Invitation.
Oh, The Wedding Invitation. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Some of those scenes are just hysterical. Like, you feel like you're sitting in the room while this stuff is going on. You know, and your ability to show that, or to light the mood, you know, like even in that skipping around, but in the, all the stuff's coming to my face, I'm sorry. the scene on Grey's, when you guys are eating at the table, when they're going through having to share with their family that they're getting separated or divorced, and uh-huh. just the way that you've created this space with the light, and And, you know, to bring that kind of dramatic time together, but in a peaceful way. Does that make sense? I don't mean to sound so.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like this drama, but you bring it with a peacefulness to kind of go, okay, this is coming to an end. You know, they fell in love, but now this is their love coming to a full circle.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's just very interesting.
Yeah, Mom,
you
I'll
do very
you,
good
I'll,
work.
I'll let you listen, Mom. She broke down that whole scene for us. So I'll let you listen to that part when we edit this.
Okay.
But Mom, you lead into a great question of Alicia. How do you, I don't know, I don't know why I've never asked every guest this. How do you, and speaking of that episode Mom just mentioned, how do you, I don't know, control, channel, like choose your emotion, not choose, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing maybe this scene's going to give you a certain emotion. So you're kind of like, okay, for me, this lens, this, that's all you talk with the director, but how do you handle some of these episodes that you've shot? I mean, whether it's the dinner, whether it's the coming out of the closet thing, like, is it, are you at a monitor like 20 feet away so you don't start crying because the sound man, like, how does that work? That was something Mom asked last night.
It's funny because, well, going back to the silent all these years, Debbie and I, when we were sitting behind monitors, we would see everyone else around us just like sometimes losing it because it was just so hard to shoot that, a lot of those scenes in that episode. And we were, both of us were just like stone face, not letting it get to us. I think it's just because it was such a difficult subject matter to shoot anyway that we couldn't let it get to us at that moment. But after it was all done and we called wrap on the last day, I think everyone just went, I just let it out at that point because it was just so much. And I remember
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but it's like everybody was on their game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everybody was focusing on their game. I mean, the actors, everybody on that episode had to be on their game in that moment. And I think they knew it.
Yeah.
They knew it and it came across. So your natural ability, you were able to do your natural gift of your art came through in every little aspect. It was amazing.
Yeah. But yeah, trying to hold all that in, it wasn't that difficult on the day just because of what you're saying, that we all had to just be on our game, that we couldn't really let it get to us because we're on a timeline. And it was just going to be constant too. If we let the emotions get to us on that particular episode, then I don't think anything would have gotten done.
It wasn't until after
it was all done. And even after I watched the episode myself, that I finally could just let it go and actually let it get to me. It's getting to me right now. It's a very,
I know, powerful. You know, it's very, like what you said. I mean, I watched it again. I even watched it again a day later with my husband. I said, honey, you've got to see this. Because it's just little gestures. Like when she goes to grab her mom's hand and her mom pulls away, I lost it.
You know,
I lost it. And I think too now, because even we don't realize how much we touch other people physically. And when they're saying to us, slow down on your contact, pull away, don't be touching right now. It's very emotional. I mean, I think deep down for all of us, we're just like, what? You know,
and then
to have that, it was just like, I lost it. But I lost it every time I watched it. But yeah, I just appreciate your work. And what I wanted to ask a question, what I shared about your inspiration about the dance and the way you used your light and the way you use your talent, where did that first spark come for you that you knew you had that gift? Like do you remember a time when you saw something or you saw something lit up or you saw a certain color? When did that kind of get to you?
Right. Yeah. Oh man. It's weird because I don't know if I really recognized it. It's hard to even recognize it sometimes, even now, to tell you the mm-hmm. truth, because my husband will even tell you that there's sometimes that I will be getting ready to go to work or go to set, and I'll even say to him, "Oh man, I'm really nervous. I'm like, what if I forgot how to light?"
Yeah.
He says that's impossible. He's like, "Did you forget how to walk?" And I'm like, "No."
Right. You have that.
He said,
"Well,
then
you
didn't,
right.
you didn't forget how to light, so you'll be fine." It's a constant. I always have to constantly remind myself. I know what I'm doing. I know how to do this craft, and I just have to trust my instinct. I don't think it was really until, honestly, I think the wedding invitation was a big one for me, because that was such a tiny little crew. We shot that with 3 crew members in my department. Mm-hmm. So I had 2 mm-hmm. people working in camera, and I had 1 person working in lighting. And the whole idea behind that film was that it was supposed to feel like a bigger budget, beautifully lit comedy.
It did. Yeah, it did.
And
probably because you had post-its all around you reminding you.
Yeah, exactly. So to try to pull that look off, and then also to only have a few really solid crew members, by the way, I mean, they were amazing. And then looking back at that going, wow, we actually did a really great job at that. I recognized, oh, that's because I knew where to put the camera. I knew what lens should go on there, what the frame size should look like, where the light should be coming from, at what quality. And it just came naturally. And so that's why the film turned out the way that it did. So that film actually brought a lot more confidence out in me that told me, I know what I'm doing. This is obviously the right path. Before that, I don't know if I necessarily was recognizing the artistry, so to speak. And now even still, like I can't see it as much as I guess as other people, because even my mom says the same thing. She's like, there's something about your work. I can't pinpoint what it is, but,
I love it.
And so I'm not really quite sure exactly what it is either. I mean, I do try to pay a lot of attention to detail. Believe it or not, a lot of the stuff that I do is on the fly. I've heard Paul talk about jazz before, and I am very much an improviser on set. And even though I do pre-plan a lot in pre-production, a lot of the things that I find or figure out are on the fly and on set. And I think I gravitate a little more towards being able to think on my feet and figuring out sometimes on the day. And sometimes that's when I get my best work, is when it isn't so pre-planned. So that might be part of it too, is the improvisation aspect of what I'm doing on the day.
Right. Well, you're letting the
wedding invitation
flow through you.
You had someone that was writing, producing, directing, and acting. So that probably gave you an interesting kind of freedom too. We reviewed it on the show. So that was where we saw it. We reviewed it the day it came out and fell in love with it. I love that Lucy inhales every form of carbohydrate there is in the first 25 minutes. I've told the director there should be an IMDb trivia of how many pounds Lucy gained in the beginning of that movie. the wedding invitation. I'm glad that you brought that up, Mom, because there's this one scene that I just totally love, and it's because I call myself the backstage guy, where since I was 14, I've been that one guy that they let hang, and just. I stay quiet and I just hear what they say, what they cry about, and so that one scene where the actor and director, Rainey Kerwin, and I should have looked up the other actress's name, they're sitting after work in the back of a car. Lucy is eating licorice.
Yeah.
There just seems like there's no form of light anywhere. So that scene just really was special because I can remember it always seemed like when a girl wanted to complain to me, not always, that they would have to have like some kind of snack before the complaining started. So I love that they were just like bonding over black licorice. You know, and I'm not being sexist or anything. I'm just saying what I observed in my life. It was like, uh-oh, the Dorito bag's coming out. Now I'm going to hear what an idiot his boyfriend is, her boyfriend is.
Yeah.
So I just loved the way you guys played off of that. But if there's anything that you could tell us that you remember about that scene, because it just looked like there was so little to no light and you guys just nailed it with just that having them lit and... So feel free if there's anything you remember to explain about that scene.
Yeah, that absolutely. That's actually very funny that you say that we nailed it because the first pass, I did not nail it. I actually had the light turned in a certain way where I was exposing them more, let's say more proper exposure. And we shot that whole scene because it's just that two shot. We didn't go into coverage really on that. And after that take, I remember Rainey, she really loved that take, but I told her, I said, you know, Rainey, I feel like the light is too directional and I need to change it. And so you're not going to be able to like use that first take. Cause I don't think the lighting is working because it felt too like there was a practical kind of right there. Cause I was just trying to get exposure on their faces. So instead, I turned the light a different way, let it bounce a little bit more, which definitely brought the exposure way down, caused it to be a little bit more grainy, but it had a way more realistic look to it. And then that's the take that she actually used in the film. I didn't nail it at first. That's the funny part. I nailed it on the second time.
But that's good. You caught it. So that you did, you know, you did kind of nail it because you caught it and you changed it. So.
Yeah. I couldn't let it go. A lot of times you'll watch, and this is where going back to the whole big budget romantic comedies that you watch, there's so many times that you'll see these night exteriors where it is just, it feels so overlit to me. Because usually comedy means to some people, and I'm going to say this in quote, bright lighting, but I don't think that it has to be that way. And it looked like at first I had lit it in that typical romantic comedy style lighting, and it just didn't feel right to me. It didn't feel real. And I think part of the reason why it caught me was that performance between the two of them was so real and authentic that I couldn't bear to let the lighting feel unauthentic. And so And then they performed it again. And I think that's at that point too, we had already been shooting for a while. And I know that the two actresses had already really formed a solid bond with each other. So that was a very real scene between the two of them. And you could see it. And part of that was improvisation with them too. I don't think all of those lines were written. They were kind of goofing around with each other. So... Yeah.
Well, that was, I mean, for people that don't know, The Wedding Invitation, you can watch it free on Amazon Prime. I think it's the best premise ever in a polite way that these girls have to find wedding dates. So I just loved the idea that the pressure's off of us, respectfully, and the girls have to come up with the gurgly stomachs and the, you know, I'm not saying it never happens, but so this is a great premise of a movie where these three girls have to find their wedding dates and go through the process. And it's written, directed, she stars in it, and co-produced by Rainey Kerwin. And you guys can go in our archives if you want to listen to the review. It came out, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so that's the what we're referring to. Really fun, lighthearted movie, just... to just, especially now, throw on when you want to have a laugh one night.
Sure. I just wanted to say, continue what you're doing, Alicia. I think I look forward to what you come up with next. And I really appreciate, I'm walking away from this conversation inspired to just how important it is to let things flow, use your instincts, and, you know, just be prepared. So Mm-hmm. You've given me a lot to inspire this week. I really, and I, like I said, I look forward to more of your work, and best to you. And be safe.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Paul. Bye.
Thanks, Mom. Take care. Bye. Yeah, I know. It's funny because Mom called in one time last year and I was interviewing. Thank you for having that. She called in one time and I was interviewing, I'm not a name dropper, but I was interviewing James Laxton, who shot Moonlight. And then all of a sudden just the phone started ringing because we're not a live show. And I saw the number. And so I ignored it. And then he was like, "Why are you hanging up on your mom? Tell her to call back." So it's just been a, like, when she
asked, that was great talking to her. Yeah, I'm so glad she could come in.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You know, so I've always just been like, well, if Alicia says no, I'll say no. But why are you asking me? Okay, so let's see. So how do you come to terms, like, when you know that it's an issue? Like, let's just say Meredith's trial, my shot. We all know Canada has better health care. We all know we're facing a medical crisis. But how do you kind of set a tone where kind of like, you know, some people in the room are going to be a little bit more frosty than others? Like, does that ever affect, like, on a human level, past where you have to stay in your zone, like, to the wrangling of it? Like, I've always wondered that.
At least on Grey's Anatomy, it doesn't seem like it. Because I think that everyone who works on Grey's Anatomy knows that the show can get political. And it does always touch on current events and what's going on in, like, the healthcare system. I mean, that's something that Grey's Anatomy has done over all of its seasons. So if someone has personal opinions about what is being said on set, it definitely doesn't come out among crew or cast members or anyone. It feels like everyone is pretty much on board with what the story is and what's being told. And that might just be because they've been on the show for so many years that they know what they've gotten into anyway, if their ideologies are different. So it doesn't seem like on Grey's Anatomy, I haven't had to tread lightly or feel like I'm walking on eggshells for the most part. Does that answer your question? Is that what you're
asking? I mean, well, I'm just always wondering how any emotion, you know, that we kind of had talked about the shooting, but I had always thought of, you know, we both know we can be in the greatest mood and walk into a room where 15 people are snapping and we're instantly going to get drug into the energy. So it just, with some of those things, I kind of was thinking, you know, and of course, heavy duty or more relevant now than ever is what these episodes that you did, you know, for, obviously, as you know, but for the audience, hit on. So at the peak of, and I just want to say real quick, something that you were part of the art of giving to me was that, not to harp on Silent all these years, but when Dr. Karev and Dr. Weber close the door and they say men out, because I didn't know where you were going with it, and I'm just going to be honest here, it frustrated me because I was thinking, like, so they're saying men can't care too, you know, I wouldn't want to support my best female friend or, God forbid, my mother. And so I remember, like, I actually got pissed and Mom was like, shut up. And I'm like, no, I'm like, this is baloney. Like, a male doctor would care. I care, like, you know, and sorry, but I was just kind of like running into this wall of just like, I'm tired of having to proclaim that I care. And I mean that with all due respect to the movement, the climate. And then when I saw what you guys were doing, it was like, I'm still choking on my foot in my mouth. You know, I was like, oh, and that's why my mom, again, that was one of her famous shut up. She's all, see, that's why you wait till the end. And that's why before you talk and that's your problem. And so I just wanted to tell you that and be able to.
A lot of people had that same reaction to that moment because they didn't know where it was going. I don't remember who it was, and it might have been someone on set because we hadn't shot the wall of women yet. Like, that actually, in the order of shooting, we did shoot the Men Out part first and then the Wall of Women. So there were some, I think it might have been a crew member, a couple of crew members that was like, what's this? I mean, men can't care either. And it's like, even on set, just wait. You'll see why we're doing it this way.
it was so brilliant. It was brilliant because I was. Oh, sorry, good. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't think your response is unjustified. I think there's a lot of people that felt that way until they saw, oh, this is why it's going this direction, is because she needed to not see a man's face while she was going towards surgery because it was a trigger for her. So, but yeah, I think that that was probably a common reaction, maybe from other audience members too, because they didn't know where that storyline was going at that moment.
Well, you know, I unfortunately have had friends that have lived it. And so I just knew but was obviously too engulfed in the episode, but I just knew that trigger of not wanting to be around any man. Like I had a friend who for years couldn't be around her own father because he was a man.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wasn't linking the two. And it was just more so just, you know, I was getting on a high horse, but I thank you for telling me that there was others and not just me. Not like I thought I was the only one, but,
I think that was pretty common. It's like you get bit by a dog and then you're scared of every dog after that. I mean, this is a similar kind of scenario. And I think that that's what they were trying to capture in that particular episode.
I don't know. I hope you never get tired of explaining that episode.
I love that episode so much because it is my first episode of Grey's Anatomy, which is one reason why I was able to stick around when they asked me to come back the next season and continue to shoot for them. And I am going back for the next season as well. So. I love being a part of the show, and I love that that was my first episode that I actually got to shoot for them. So I have no problem talking about it.
So you're coming back next season. Hold on. You just changed my question line. So is Chief going to die? No, I'm just kidding. I know they got cut short and I was just like, this is such a, of course, but you know, I could try. So, all right. Well, you know, I have a theory and of course.
I never know anything anyway. I mean, that's the thing is like, I have a lot of friends that are huge Grey's Anatomy fans and they'll ask me these questions of, come on, don't you know what blah, 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 or what's going to happen? And honestly, I don't. Because I don't get the script until maybe a week before we shoot anyway. So I honestly don't know things that are happening. Yeah. And I think they do it on purpose. Just they hold those scripts tight and they don't release them until they're absolutely ready for people to read them. So I don't know anyway.
And by the way, I loved the wedding invitation. So this wasn't just a shameless ploy to talk to somebody from Grey's Anatomy. I totally, I've seen that 4 or 5 times. So with our closing questions, and they're pretty much just like, you can just name the genre or name the department. So they're not really any answers you need to explain. They're just kind of like one word, like the Inside the Actor's Studio. So a genre that's your dream genre that before you have to whatever, hang up your camera, you're like, I want to DP this genre.
Yeah. I've always said that I want to shoot action comedy. And not necessarily, maybe a little bit more on the darker side of action comedy, like John Wick. I love the Hangover series.
I'm watching The Hangover 2 right now.
Oh yeah. I gravitate towards that. Also, cause I feel like everyone's just having so much fun on set. I really love action, not necessarily just the big blockbuster action. I like it when it has that comedy element to it. So I would say big action comedy film would be amazing to do.
Oh, that's, well, The Hangover, I'm watching part 2 right now, and I'm just like, I remember, everyone remembers how hilarious the first one is. I forgot how funny the second one is. And you said you were married. Otherwise, I would have said you just want to work with Bradley Cooper all day. let's see. I'm going to admit, you know what? I'll do something special for you since you've told me something so many times. In A Star Is Born, I totally have a man crush on Bradley Cooper. Like,
well, yeah, especially in that one. He's singing and playing and...
Yeah, and just and some male friends have been like, well, you're talking about Bradley Cooper too much. And I'm like, no, it's also what it has to do with is that he's writing, producing, directing, acting, playing.
Yeah.
And then he's also talking about his own personal demons in such an open way. So the next question is genre, just the opposite that you would never do, you know, lights are off, you have no food money, but it does not matter. You're not shooting this genre.
Yeah. Genre wise, oh goodness, that is a hard one because I don't feel like there's a genre that I wouldn't. It might be maybe it's a genre that doesn't necessarily categorize as your typical genre. I don't feel like I could shoot anything that is political in the sense that would paint like the current administration in a positive light. I don't know if that's a genre though, or like
you might have just invented one.
Pro large factory farming. I don't know, but that's not really a genre. So like that could fall into.
I love
into,
it.
That
could I could never
term.
Shoot a pro.
That's the thing is, I don't genre wise. I will shoot any genre. I don't have a problem with any genre out there as long as the story is good. But if there's a story that doesn't resonate with me in my ideologies, and I feel like if I were to shoot it, it could promote something that I really believe strongly against, I wouldn't be able to shoot that. So I don't know what that would
be.
I guess it would have to
really makes
and then I go,
sense.
Oh no, yeah. I can't shoot that.
Okay. No, I love that. I mean, I love what you said because that's probably the only genre that story that I don't think could. Yeah, I guess we'll do a whole other podcast about that. but I want to say one last thing that you'll actually find funny because what you said was your story choice was my friend's 75. So he obviously lived through Cambodia, Watergate, Nixon, civil rights, all that. Mm-hmm. And he called me up one day. He says, you know, this guy turned the N-word I was young, the N-word was Nixon. He's like, I don't care about Watergate. And my friend used to be like, you couldn't even say, like, I saw this great Nixon doc. He would get mad. I showed him Frost Nixon.
Mm.
And he was like, why'd you show me that? I'm like, because the great filmmaking and the banter. And they were like going back and forth. Oh, that was such a waste. So anyways, I just think it was the N-word was Nixon during civil rights.
Let's see.
The last two would be, you mentioned PA. And so as PAs, we experience being bounced around. But that aside, if you got to be a department head on like a big feature, what would be a different department that you would like to do?
There are definitely other departments that I find fascinating. I guess I probably would really enjoy editing. I've edited in the past and a lot of my own projects I edit myself. So I do enjoy editing. I think that would be something that would be interesting to try out. However, I don't have the skills to actually work on something substantial in that department. I feel like editing I would probably gravitate more towards than anything. Directing I do find fascinating. It's just I don't feel like I have the shorthand knowledge to be able to communicate well with actors, with getting performance. So I feel like that would be something that I would want to learn and train with before I would even step into those shoes. I feel like either editing or directing, if I was able to practice beforehand and learn the technology behind both of those things.
Ah, interesting. in 2 minutes, what would you tell Alicia on the first day of AFI?
Oh, man. First day of AFI. Don't be intimidated, because one thing going into AFI, and I went in right out of undergrad, there were a lot of colleagues and other fellow DPs that were in the program that were already way more experienced in the camera department than I was. They had already been working in the industry, and they had already been practicing cinematography, whereas I had not. I'd come out of undergrad. And I did find that to be really, really hard at first. And also I felt like, even in my first project, I felt like I might've been getting pushed around a little bit. Maybe even by some of my crew members who were also fellow cinematographers, and I'm not going to name any names, but it did feel it felt like they knew better than I did. And so they were being a little pushy on stuff. And I did let that intimidate me a little bit, but I think that early on, just after maybe a few months of being there, I realized, you know what? I have every right to be here. I also know what I'm doing. I'm learning this craft just like everyone else. They might just be more experienced than I am. And I stopped letting that get to me. And truthfully, by the end of the school year, I started hiring outside crew members because I didn't like that feeling that I was getting from some of the other fellows. I hate to say it.
That sounds cool.
But yeah, I needed to be a little bit more confident going in. I was there for a reason. They obviously had picked me to be in that program for a reason. And I should have had a little bit more confidence, I think, right at the beginning, and not feel so intimidated by some of the other students.
Interesting. I really love that answer. Thank you for coming on our show. And I'm a fan, so I'm going to be following the work. And I just, really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for asking me. No, I'm so happy that I could do this. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much, Alicia. And you have a wonderful day, and all my wishes for safety and all that stuff to you and yours.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you for joining us on Talking Pictures. Thank you for Alicia Robbins for joining us. You know my motto, whether it's afternoon, morning, or night, or whatever other crazy time of day you've discovered, make sure and watch a good movie. Aloha.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, real conversation and movie-induced inspiration.